It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster.
Conquered! Oh!
You like fighting a woman?
You got grown-ass wrestlers in the back going on Twitter.
Come over here and fight me.
Oh my God, we're only an hour in.
You have legs.
They've made Solo a monster.
I was 99% positive it was just chest up.
No.
I want out of my contract if I don't get what I want.
Welcome to episode 856. Of the Solo Monster Sounds Off here for WrestleMania Sunday, April 7th, 2024. I am the Solo Monster. WrestleMania Night 1 has come and gone. I am very tired. Not nearly as cold, though, as people in that stadium were, based on all the messages I got. Sounded like it, too. Sounded like those people's vocal cords were frozen for a good part of the show. They were making a lot of noise. It certainly didn't translate to TV. I'm going to talk about WrestleMania Night 1. I'm going to talk about what's to come tonight, because WrestleMania is not over yet. And I cannot wait, I don't know about you guys, but I cannot wait to see CM Punk back in action on Dynamite this week against Jack Perry. Yes, apparently this is a real thing. And Tony Khan is going to air never-before-seen footage from backstage at Wembley Stadium of the altercation that led to Punk being fired with cause from AEW. I thought the Adam Copeland segment on Wednesday was bad enough, given how transparent it was. But this right here, I mean, this is just ridiculous. This is ridiculous. I'm going to talk about why this is happening, what led to it, because I have not had a chance yet to chime in on the CM Punk interview with Ariel Helwani on Monday. I've been waiting for this, and you're getting it today. Plus my thoughts on the Hall of Fame Friday night and the Bray Wyatt documentary. I have still not seen the Roman Reigns A&E biography, so I can't comment on it. I did see the Dark Side of the Ring episode on Harley Race this week, and I thought it was good, but there will be no review for it because I just did not have the time with everything going on. So we will return to our regularly scheduled Dark Side reviews next Sunday. But this has been quite the week here. For those who don't know, I was able to traveled to Philadelphia on Thursday to record my WrestleMania predictions from the Duncan Music Lounge, the Philly Duncan Music Lounge at iHeart Studios in Philadelphia. And this has been something that's been talked about now for a while. And along the way, the opportunity came up for me to be able to sit down with the world's strongest man, Mark Henry, and chat with him about WrestleMania and really any number of things that I wanted to chat with him about. He could not have been nicer. I'm sure many of you on Twitter and Facebook have seen pictures. It was a beautiful space, right? Not a very big space, but the Duncan Lounge was very cool, very intimate. We were able to get some Sound Off fans in there. I wish we could have had more. I know there were more people who wanted to come out. I was told that we were very limited on space, so I had to adhere to those restrictions, but it was very cool to see some of you there. Chatted with Mark for about 40 minutes. He could not have been nicer. Very knowledgeable, very wise man. Talk about Paul Heyman being the wise man. Mark Henry has been in the wrestling business for a very long time, and he has a great eye for talent. The number of stars that he has discovered, and he'll just send him a DM on social media. They could be an athlete in some other sport. He thinks they have something. There's some kind of intangible they have for pro wrestling. That was certainly the case with Bianca Belair. It's been the case with other people. So again, just a pleasure to talk to him. If you did not see the interview, the audio, I pushed that out as well. But check out the video. It's up on the YouTube channel. And then all of my predictions in full for Night 1 and Night 2 are up there as well. Got some interaction with the audience and listener Q&A. So I want to say thank you to them for allowing me to use the space. Thank you to Mark for his time. I stayed over on Friday. House of Glory and Wrestling Revolver, Sammy Callahan's promotion, partnered up for a show for the first time at the Trinity Memorial Church in Philadelphia. And we ended up having a very impromptu TNA X Division title match in the main event, which was the first time ever, Mustafa Ali against Amazing Red. And Red was able to coax him into putting the X Division title on the line. They had a great match. There was a street fight with Charles Mason and Steve Macklin that put the street in street fight, and they literally brawled out into the street and stopped oncoming traffic And no, I don't know who the driver of that blue car was, if you saw the show on Triller, or if you were there. They did not seem happy, though, but that was amazing. And then Speedball Mike Bailey and Masha Slamovich, two people who have been in the ring together before, had an incredible match as well. The replay is up. It's on Triller TV, the former Fight TV, and I met a lot of people at that show as well. Met more people there than I did even at the Duncan Lounge, including people from all over the world, all the way over from Kuwait. Shout out to Yusuf. I mean, I met a lot of really cool people. Keith, so thank you for that. And then I drove home so I wouldn't get home too late on Friday to be ready for this weekend, because, of course, it is the busiest weekend of the year, which is why I wanted to be here and not sitting outside freezing my ass off in a stadium in Philadelphia. But let's get into it here. If you want to make a PayPal donation, you may do so on thesolomonster.com. You'll see the link at the very top of the link tree. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout out. PB, thank you very much. I am doing well. I hope you are too. You're too kind. The Portland pop star, Paul Hamilton. Paul, thank you. I hope you are having a great WrestleMania weekend. Big B, Brian Becerra, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, the Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soep, Final Boss, Frederick McCullough, the Gentleman Masher, Shane Maniachi. A weekend so nice he had to drop a donation twice. In honor of WrestleMania, Shane, thank you. Killshot Keith Hart, who I had the chance to meet at the Hog Show on Friday. So, Keith, thank you. The Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard, Nightstalker, Nayef Alsafar, Kingmaker, Christos Kalansis, Best in the Game, Trey Porter, Jazz Jackrabbit, Scott the Stump Woodford, whose mother, Patricia, turns 86 years old on Monday. A very happy birthday to Patricia. Here's to many more birthdays yet to come. Scott, I hope Memphis is doing well, too. And happy birthday to Alex. Also want to give a shout out to Everett Robert. He has a stage play called Sputnik about Sputnik Monroe and his role in the integration of Memphis, Tennessee, that is being performed at the William Inge Festival in Independence, Kansas next weekend. That's the 18th to the 20th. The festival is the official state festival for the state of Kansas, and his play was one of only 14 selected out of over 100 entries. So congrats to Everett. And if you are in the area, if you are able to, definitely go ahead and check that out. Before we get into things, I want to let you know about something pretty cool. I want to let you know about a cool mobile game called Modern Mania Wrestling GM. It's a pro wrestling general manager game for your phone or your tablet. I just downloaded it on my phone a couple of weeks ago, my iPhone. This thing is really cool. It's got cool-looking characters. The artwork is just top-notch. Easy to pick up and play in short little bursts, or even if you want to play it for an extended period of time, that's fine too. It's pretty simple. You collect cards for wrestlers, for match types, for venues, for skits, and you use these cards to book wrestling shows. So it's like your own personal edition of Be the Booker. The better shows you book, the more in-game cash you earn to collect more cards. And you can team up the right wrestlers, you'll unlock their tag team card. If you match certain wrestlers against each other, you'll unlock their feud card. You can create factions you can compete with or control other promotions inside the universe that the game has created, and just see if you could do a good job of managing your own roster. It's honestly a lot of fun. Even better than that, it's free to play, and the game is constantly being updated with new characters and features. So, to get the game, just search for Modern Mania Wrestling GM in the App Store or the Google Play Store. Once you've played through the tutorial, head to the settings menu, and in the bottom right corner, you're going to see a code button. There, you can enter the promo code SOLOMONSTER, and you can unlock a bunch of free wrestlers and game cash. How cool is that? It's like a little Easter egg, only for Sound Off fan. Remember Game Genie back in the day? Consider me your genie. Just don't rub me. So check it out. Boy, this got dark real fast. Check it out. Modern Mania Wrestling GM. Again, it is very cool. And you too can be the booker. I went 5-2 in my WrestleMania predictions for night one. And it turns out that match order that Meltzer reported was the correct order. So we'll see if it holds for night two. WrestleMania 40 night one was not as good as last year's night one, but the last two matches saved it for me. And I liked the opener, but that middle of the show was very dull. If the crazy spot fest ladder matches are your thing, you probably love the tag team title match. I didn't. The fact that people were freezing their asses off didn't help matters. I mean, I heard from so many people after the stream last night who were there who told me, bro, like, we were freezing. We had head colds by the time the show was over. That doesn't bode well for tonight, if that's the case, because I don't know that it's going to be that much warmer. Nick Khan talked this week about potentially moving WrestleMania to late April, starting in 2025 and going forward. Either that or move to indoor venues, which would be the wise move. If they're going to run earlier in the month, if you're going to run first week in April, especially in the Northeast, I mean, if you could find places that have, you know, like it's a dome or a dome stadium or something, that's the better way to go. Otherwise, you know, if they want to move it to late April, I think that makes sense. The main event was billed as the biggest tag team match of all time. It was The Rock and Roman Reigns against Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins, The Rock's first real match in more than a decade. And he slimmed down for it. He looked great out there. They paced it slow. It built. And the first half of this was very slow. But they knew they were going 45 minutes. And when it was over, The Rock pinned Cody Rhodes after a rock bottom and a people's elbow. And it was the right outcome. Even though Rock has been lighting this guy up on the mic, he's been insulting his family and whipping him like a dog and making him bleed, even on Monday. And then The Rock goes in there and pins him, just to show you who the real boss, the real final boss is. But it's fine so long as Cody wins the title tonight. He cannot lose three straight WrestleMania main events back to back to back without doing, as I see it, permanent damage to him as a top babyface in this company. People will not be able to look at him quite the same way if he cannot go in there tonight and finish the job. So after Cody wins, they have a future match now set up with Cody and Rock that they can circle back to whenever Rock is free. You know, they get two big matches out of things now instead of just Rock against Roman. And it also needed to happen this way to make it Bloodline rules tonight. But this turned into a fun main event after a slow start. They even did a spot where Roman accidentally speared The Rock, which did not factor into the finish, but I'm sure it will factor into something at some point going forward. Very interesting that Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins, and Cody in particular at different points in the match, got booed in Philadelphia. And it wasn't just like scattershot. There were audible boos for Cody in moments where you would not expect or you would not hope that there would be boos. That'll be something to keep an eye on tonight as well. Seth's knee was worked over in the match. That will probably play a role in the story of his World Heavyweight title match against Drew McIntyre tonight. But there was a story that dropped earlier in the week on ESPN by Mark Raimondi titled The Inside Story on WWE's Fan-Driven WrestleMania Pivot with The Rock. And from the story, they interviewed a bunch of people, Brian Gewirtz being one of them, and Gewirtz said, would the fans be as adamant Cody needs to finish his story if he did not win the Royal Rumble? Once he won the Rumble, then I think there was a certain element of, hey, don't screw with us now. You can't dangle the Royal Rumble win and then take it away. And I think everyone, Rock included, was like, yeah, they're right. We should continue this story as it naturally would play out if this were real life. If this were real life and he won the Rumble and he did not win last year's WrestleMania, there is literally no logical reason, even though you could try to make one up, why he would not want to face Roman and win the title. And that is straight from Brian Gewirtz. In his own words, there is no logical reason why Cody Rhodes would agree to step aside as he did and let The Rock take his spot a year after what the Bloodline did to him at WrestleMania 39. Thank you very much. Now, The Rock gave his version of events, one that does not make sense timeline-wise. He either got his dates mixed up or he's turning into Hulk Hogan. But he gave an interview to Fox News. This is what he had to say. The original plan was for me to come back as the babyface, the big babyface, and face Roman Reigns for the Universal Championship and put on a show here in Philadelphia, the biggest main event of all time. I believe the qualities of a good leader, not to say that I'm a good leader, but I believe the qualities of one, is one who has the ability to pivot, but also to make sure that you listen to the people. And as I came back, I started to realize that while fans love the idea of The Rock and Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, there was also this other storyline building that they had been invested in for a couple of years with a guy named Cody Rhodes, who, wrestling royalty, Dusty Rhodes is his dad. Dustin Rhodes is his brother. And we, one of two things could have happened in that moment, and this happened in January. Which is not the case, but he said this happened in January. We could have either kept trucking through, I'm a director of the board, I got a little bit of influence here in the WWE, we could have kept trucking through, or the thing that bugged me, I was in Hawaii, and I realized, man, there's a segment of fans here who are just disappointed, and it hurt my heart to think that. Well, I don't want to truck through and leave these fans disappointed. But not only that, we also got a guy in Cody Rhodes who's been working his ass off. And he's been part of my life for years now, and this is his story, and who, by the way, Cody, as we speak very openly here, could not be a better human being. Amazing, understood, I get it, I understand the position that we're in, Rock, you and Roman, biggest ever, I'm here for it, and I support you, and that's a big deal for somebody to say, especially in our crazy world of egocentric professional wrestling. So back in January, I called Nick Khan, our friend, and I said, I have an idea. How about this? Why don't we take care of the people? Give them this story of Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns. And Nick said, great. And I said, however, a little bit of a twist. He said, what's that? I said, what if I become the greatest bad guy of all time? And that was the intent and the intention. Now, he admitted it again at the presser last night after the show that this was not the original plan, so we can put this to bed once and for all for the people who still weren't sure about that. But he said it was not the original plan. It was clear to him after that SmackDown in Birmingham when Cody stepped aside that they needed to pivot, and he said he couldn't be happier with the result. Of course he couldn't be happier. He just won the main event last night. He probably wasn't winning it if it was just him against Roman. I would imagine he was putting his cousin over. Last night, I mean, he beat that boy's ass for weeks on TV, and then he pinned him with his move. I would be happy too. The January timeline doesn't make any sense. You know, by his own admission, it wasn't until that SmackDown on Groundhog Day in Birmingham that they realized the backlash was so intense. So I'm just going to assume his timeline is off a little bit. And so for the second time in a decade, going into a WrestleMania with a zero on the end of it, the fans revolted. They made their voices heard, and it led to a change in direction for the better. So don't let anybody ever tell you that you don't have a voice. We had an excellent Intercontinental title match. Gunther's reign as champion comes to an end after 666 days. The story they told with Sammy telling his wife in the back before, keep their son back there, I don't want him to see what's going to happen. Him walking through the back, running into Kevin Owens, who fired him up. The match itself, the story they told there, it was all great. Sammy breaking out his super brain buster from his El Generico days, which looks scary as hell. And Sami Zayn ends the streak of Gunther. And I am still conflicted about that finish. Now I'm going to let it play out to see where they take the Zayn and Gable story, because Chad Gable is still attached to this story. Yeah, the Chad Gable story with Gunther is dead. That's it. It's over. That ended last night. As soon as Gunther got pinned and the streak was over and he lost the title, that story died a death. But this should be the start of a brand new story for Chad Gable. And the comparison that I made last night on the review was to Randy Orton and Christian in 2011. Where you had someone in Christian who the fans were behind. He won the World Heavyweight title. People were very happy for him. He's finally going to get a run. And then at the tapings, 48 hours later, Randy Orton hits him with an RKO and pins him and wins the World Heavyweight title. And there were a lot of people who were very upset about that. I can't believe they're doing this to Christian. They're burying him. They're doing all this stuff. And by the end of the summer, the two of them had the feud of the year. I mean, it was right up there with Cena and Punk, if nothing else. But the feud and the matches they had were fantastic, right? We got this great program, this great rivalry between Randy Orton and Christian. And we could get something like that here with Sami Zayn and Chad Gable. We may have Gable go heel. We don't know. Again, we'll see how it plays out. Gable, clearly, he made a comment last night about how Sami basically owed him first crack at that title, which I'm sure he'll tell him on Raw Monday night. And then we'll see where the story goes from here. And as long as Chad Gable is kept in the mix, I'm happy. Because he deserves to be in the mix. He's earned his spot on that card week to week, doing something meaningful on the show, not just coming out and going, thank you, and a shoosh, and doing comedy bullshit and getting jobbed out in every other match. He deserves something to really sink his teeth into. And I think Gable and Sammy could be fantastic. So I hate that they ended one story, which could have been great. It was kind of a rocky story in its own way. They went in a different direction. Now we'll see what they do with Gable and Sammy going forward. Gunther, meanwhile, is now free and clear to challenge for the World Heavyweight title in the next several months. Unless they draft him over to SmackDown, then it'll be the other belt. But I would have that title on him by summer's end if it's me. But it's only bigger and better things for him moving forward. That title reign that he had, from the moment they called him up and he beat Ricochet and he won the Intercontinental title, 666 days, all the matches he had, last year's WrestleMania, this year's WrestleMania, back-to-back fantastic matches that arguably stole the show, that was his proof of concept. This man is the real deal. And the fans buy into him. You know, I was using the term final boss for him before Rock came back. But that's what he was. That's what he felt like. He felt like a real final boss in a video game. So he proved himself. He's going to be just fine. It's only bigger and better for him. We had Rhea Ripley retaining her women's world title against Becky Lynch, who came into the match sick with strep throat. She was running 102 fever the other day. So props to her for going in there and still having a very good match. I enjoyed the match. It was not the classic that Rhea and Charlotte had at last year's show, but it was the right outcome. I would have kept the belt on Rhea as well. There's big matches for her going forward in the future with her and Bianca Belair, maybe her and Jade Cargill, although that's a lot further down the road. Then we had Brother versus Brother, which was one of the bigger matches they promoted on the show this year. Jimmy Uso against Jey Uso. And what I like to call their Festival of Super Kicks last night. Very disappointing. This was the worst of the three brother versus brother matches in WrestleMania history. Somebody showed me a great comment. I think they said they got it off Facebook, but it was great. That Jimmy and Jay made Matt and Jeff look like Brett and Owen. And I said, well said. I don't know what this was. I mean, the crowd was a letdown for a lot of matches on this show, but you can't just put it all on the crowd or the weather. These two just had a very dull, very boring, heatless match. Especially for something that's been promoted as one of the big matches on the show. It's blood, it's sibling rivalry, it goes all the way back to last year when Jimmy turned on his brother inexplicably, but he did, cost him the undisputed title at SummerSlam, cost him the Intercontinental title against Gunther, cost him the tag team titles as well with Cody. All these things that Jimmy has done to Jay. And they go in there, and this is a match that they've openly talked for years now about wanting to have at WrestleMania one day. We dreamt about this day that it would be me and my brother one-on-one and we can have a match at WrestleMania. And they went out there last night and they shit the bed. That was a very underwhelming match. And surprising with the outcome too. I thought they would throw Jimmy a bone. You know, he's been the joke of the bloodline. Jay's the one who's been pushed as a serious single star on Raw. Jimmy really hasn't had anything, no momentum whatsoever. He and Solo both. I mean, Solo's on this losing streak. But they had Jay go over anyway. Just a very disappointing match all around. The tag team titles are split. We now have two sets of tag team champions again. Awesome Truth. They are the Raw tag team champions pulling down the Raw belts in the ladder match. Grayson Waller and Austin Theory are the new SmackDown tag team champions. So I nailed the split and I nailed both winners in my predictions. Judgment Day losing clears the way for Damian Priest to make his presence felt tonight. We'll get to that in a second here. Rey Mysterio and Andrade replacing the storyline injured Dragon Lee, who was taken out by a mystery assailant, Carlito. They took on Santos Escobar and Dirty Dom, and the recently retired Jason Kelsey, and the still very active Lane Johnson of the Philadelphia Eagles made a cameo. At the end of this match, they came out of the crowd dressed in Philadelphia Eagles-themed lucha masks. And they stopped Dominic from, I think, bringing a chair into the ring. And it led to Rey and Andrade getting the win. They got into the ring. They unmasked to reveal themselves. I couldn't possibly care any less. I thought the match was actually a little disappointing, frankly, of what I was expecting out of these four guys. And then that being the finish, I don't give a shit. Maybe if you're an Eagles fan, if you're a big NFL fan, if you're a Jason Kelsey fan, you thought it was cool to see him. Okay. Didn't do anything for me. So I thought that was disappointing. And then we had Jade Cargill, Bianca Belair, and Naomi with a win over Damage Control. The match was fine. The match itself wasn't anything special, but the match accomplished exactly what it set out to do, which was establish Jade Cargill as a star. And they had her out there on the apron, and Bianca was fighting for the tag, eventually got the hot tag, Jade tagged in, she got to be, do all of her power spots, she won the match for her team, she looked great for what they had her do in the match. I thought she looked great. I mean, she always looks great, but she looked great in the match, so they accomplished what they wanted to. That was night one. Now we feed into night two, which takes place in just a matter of hours as I sit here at 1:30 in the afternoon on a Sunday, half dead. Let's go through these predictions here. This is the match order that Meltzer listed as of a few days ago. He nailed it with the order for night one. I'm assuming this is going to be the order for night two. We have Seth Rollins, fresh off a loss in the main event last night, defending his World Heavyweight Championship against Drew McIntyre. CM Punk, who I'm going to be talking about in a second, he will be on commentary. So how is this going to play out? Cannot imagine that CM Punk is going to be sitting there at ringside and not get involved in some way. Whether that's as a distraction because McIntyre comes over to him, or he just physically gets involved in some way. He's going to get involved. He's going to play a part in whatever happens here in this match. Now, it was announced on Tuesday that Clash at the Castle is coming back. They have not had one since the first one in 2022. That had that awesome Sheamus and Gunther match. And that was also the night that Drew McIntyre got screwed over by a debuting Solo Sikoa and lost to Roman Reigns. So they are bringing back Clash at the Castle, but not to Cardiff. This time it's going to be on Saturday, June 15th in Scotland at the OVO Hydro in Glasgow. Now, it's a stadium show in 2022. In 2024, it's an arena show. I don't know why they decided not to look for a stadium or someplace bigger, but I'm sure it's going to be loud. It's going to be great, as most of these international shows are. I think back to Backlash in Puerto Rico last year. I mean, what a fucking show that was, and the crowd played a great role in that, right? I mean, they were so enthusiastic for everything. You go overseas to Europe and a lot of these different countries that don't get big shows like this, and you have, in an arena setting especially, where it's not a huge building, it's indoors, right? Going to have a loud, crazy crowd there in Glasgow. But Drew McIntyre is the Scottish psychopath. So all this talk about his contract status and is he or is he not going to stick around, he's not going anywhere. And this is just confirmation that he's not going anywhere, because he's going to be headlining that show. Not a doubt in my mind. The only question is he going to headline as champion, or is he going to headline challenging for the title? I actually feel like that might be the better place for him to win the title. And if CM Punk is not yet ready to come back in June, because that's probably cutting it a little close, then you can have McIntyre win the championship there and set up for a showdown with Punk at SummerSlam, if Punk is ready to come back by SummerSlam. So there's a few different ways you can go here. Here's what I'm predicting, though. I'm predicting that Punk gets involved in some way. It leads to Seth Rollins winning, right? He lost last night, but he wins here. But he doesn't come out of it in great shape, right? The Rock and Roman were working over Seth's leg in the match last night. That is going to play a role absolutely in the match here tonight. He wins the match. Punk has cost Drew McIntyre. Damian Priest, after his loss on night one, no longer tag team champion, he comes down and cashes in his Money in the Bank, and he wins the World Heavyweight title off of Seth Rollins. And walking into Raw this Monday, I believe that Damian Priest will be World Heavyweight Champion. We have a Philadelphia street fight. Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits take on the Final Testament. They got the word street in their name. It's a street fight. I'll tell you what, if they don't brawl out into the street like Charles Mason and Steve Maclin did at the Hog Show on Friday, this is going to be very disappointing. But Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits should be taking the win here. I don't really see it going down any other way. We have LA Knight one-on-one with AJ Styles. They've tried to put a little more heat on this by having them brawl at the WWE World. I guess they were doing autograph signings. They spotted each other. They went at it for a few minutes. Security, you would think, would break these guys up within 5 seconds. Nope. They just rolled around. It felt like forever before they finally got broken up. Evidently, there was no security working WWE World that day. So it was a good angle, try to put a little more heat on things. I said this when I did the prediction show at the Duncan Lounge the other day, and people were surprised, but I'm going to stick with my prediction. I think that AJ Styles wins this match. And I think that this is not the last that we're going to see of these two in the ring together. I think they're going to run this back at least one more time, probably a Backlash. AJ has not won a match. He's not won a big match in a very long time. I can't remember when the last time even was. And if they want to extend this one more month, you could have AJ win here. You could have LA Knight win the rematch. So I think AJ goes over. Then we have Logan Paul defending the United States Championship against Randy Orton and Kevin Owens, who have been awfully kind to each other so far in this feud, even on Friday night. They're like best friends. That will not be the case tonight at WrestleMania, and I think Logan Paul will end up being the beneficiary. He'll eke out a win. I see him retaining the U.S. title, and then you can build to LA Knight and Logan Paul come SummerSlam. Big match in Cleveland that they could do for the U.S. title. Put the belt on LA Knight on that show. We have Io Sky defending the WWE Women's Championship against Bayley. Now, as the match order currently stands, this would go on before the main event. This is the spot that in the past would typically be referred to as the death spot, the piss break spot, or the obligatory women's match that for many years they would stick in that spot to kind of bring the crowd down. That's the spot that these two women find themselves in here, sandwiched between the U.S. title match and the main event for the Undisputed title, which is not an ideal spot for them to be in, but it looks like if this is true, this is where they're going to be slotted. That is part of what is factoring into my decision here. I think that Io Sky is walking out with that women's title. I think they're going to hold off on Bayley's title win for another time. Again, could be Backlash in France. They're going to be there in a month. But it just feels to me, the match order being what it is, and the fact that Damage Control already got beat last night, this just feels to me like Io is going to retain to kind of throw people off and keep this going for at least another month. Bayley is going to win the title at some point. There's no doubt about it. It could be tonight. I could be wrong. But I just feel like tonight's not going to be that night. That might be the outcome more than any other match on this card tonight that really throws people for a loop, where they were expecting one thing and then they went in a different direction. But I don't believe that's going to be the case with this next match. This is the main event for the undisputed WWE Universal Championship. I cannot wait until we get to the day where I don't have to say that long sentence to describe this title. We could just call it the WWE Championship. Maybe that'll be the case coming out of WrestleMania. It will be Roman Reigns defending against Cody Rhodes. And if you can believe it, this is the first time that Roman Reigns is wrestling matches on back-to-back nights since May of 2022. Almost a full 2 years. This man is working his second consecutive night. This is a must-win for Cody Rhodes. It was a must-win coming into the weekend. It is even more of a must-win coming out of last night's show. Cody Rhodes lost in the main event of WrestleMania last year. He fought and fought and fought to make his way back. He had to win the Royal Rumble twice, something someone has not done in almost 30 years. Then he stepped aside, but then he changed his mind, and he said, Roman Reigns, I choose you. He's like fucking Pikachu. And so we end up with this match here. We end up with the tag match first, and Cody loses it for his team. He gets pinned by The Rock. He has, technically speaking, lost two consecutive WrestleMania main events now. He cannot lose a third. It just can't happen. There's no other top babyface in the history of this company that I could think of in the position that this man is in who would go in there and would lose a third straight time like this, let alone lose a third straight time and still be looked at as the top babyface in the company. Because if he loses again, it's on to the next. You know, Cody will be fine. He'll have a nice little spot on the roster, but it won't be the same. And why would you want to do that? Why would you want to kill off your top babyface? By making him look impotent. Making him look like he's simply incapable of grabbing the brass ring and finishing the story and closing the chapter once and for all, right? He's got to win. He said it himself on ESPN. He was on First Take the other day. He said, if I don't finish the story, I might as well move over to commentary. It's true. Let him do commentary. Maybe he could sweep the floors. He can be a janitor. There's any number of things he could do. He could be a referee. He could be an agent, right? He's already got the suit. He could be a producer in the back. sit there with a headset on. He did that in AEW. But he's got to win this match. So how does it go down? Because I have Cody Rhodes winning, in case I didn't mention. My prediction is that we will have a new champion tonight. But how does it go down? Well, it's bloodline rules. By virtue of Rock and Roman winning last night, that means they can interfere to their heart's content. There's no rules. They can use chairs. They can have tables. They can use leather weight belts to whip each other with. If The Rock wanted to pick up Mama Rhodes and roll her like a bowling ball and bowl Cody over, I mean, there's any number of things they could do here. I think that we're going to have Jey Uso come out to fight off his brother Jimmy, because that issue was probably not over between the two of them, and Jey always has Cody's back, right? Former tag team partner. So Jey will fight off Jimmy. That takes care of the Usos. Now you have the issue of Solo Sikoa, who we did not see at all last night, but you know he's going to be there tonight, and I think it would be insane for them not to repeat the same spot that ended the main event last year. You got to get a rise out of the crowd. You got to tease that, oh my God, they're going to do the same thing again, and then Cody kicks out at 2.5. So Solo's going to be out there. He's going to get involved. Who could neutralize the threat posed by Solo Sikoa? If only there was somebody who was beaten by Solo Sikoa only a few months ago and has not been seen since, who was dominated by this man, who also would like to see Cody finish his story in a fair fight. That man is John Cena. John Cena's been talking about WrestleMania lately in the media way too much to not actually be at WrestleMania. John Cena will show up, we'll hear the trumpets, he will take care of Solo Sikoa to prevent a repeat of WrestleMania 39. Now Seth Rollins, I don't know what his status is going to be, right? He's got the bad knee. If he loses the world title at the beginning of the show, do they do an injury angle with him? He may physically be unable to come out and help Cody Rhodes. I'm not expecting to see him out there for the main event at all. But you've still got The Rock. So if Seth is not out there to fight off The Rock, and Cody now, it's still a handicap match here, right? He's got to contend with Roman. He's got to contend with Rock. Who could possibly come out to take care of The Rock? That's when you hear the glass shatter. And personally, I would love to hear Disturbed one last time. You know, Rock brought back his Hollywood theme. I'd love to see the Disturbed song come back, but doesn't matter either way. The glass shatters. Hopefully the people are not frozen solid tonight and they would actually react to it, because this could be an all-time moment here. If the glass shatters and we get a zoom in on The Rock's face, his eyes bugging out of his head like old times, here comes Austin. He'd probably be in a t-shirt, but would love to see the old BMF vest. And here he comes marching down to the ring 25 years after he and Rock went toe-to-toe in their first WrestleMania main event in this very city of Philadelphia. And who knows The Rock better than Stone Cold? He comes out. We get one last stunner. Rock takes a big bump for it. We get a fair fight. In the end, it's a fair fight. Cody and Roman. Cody Rhodes wins the Undisputed Championship. He finishes the story. And we get the big celebration to close out WrestleMania 40. That's how the show, I predict, is going to end. That's how the show should end. All's well that ends well. This is going to be overbooked to all hell, but great. If you're going to overbook it, make it fun. This could be a lot of fun, this main event. I am really looking forward to it. I mean, even though last night, again, it took a while for that match to get going. They paced it. They knew they had a long time. I'm sure tonight they're going to give them 30 to 40 minutes for this match. And again, make or break for Cody Rhodes as a top babyface in this company. Post-WrestleMania is interesting because Triple H has said the draft is coming in about a month. So we don't know who's going to end up where. But if the rosters, at least as far as top names, don't radically change, and I think they will change, but as things currently stand, I could see AJ Styles as a first challenger for Cody Rhodes on SmackDown coming out of WrestleMania. AJ is not going to win the title, but it would be a feud we haven't seen yet on WWE television. It would be a great opponent for Cody to work with. He can get a couple of pay-per-view matches out of it. I just think you want to put some distance between Cody and Randy Orton before you jump right into that. That's a natural match. You don't do that coming out of WrestleMania. Maybe you do that at SummerSlam. Maybe you do it some other time, maybe next year. But I just throw that out there, that AJ Styles, I think, would make for a good opponent for Cody. And that could be another reason, frankly, why he gets the win at WrestleMania. Even if LA Knight does come back and get his win back, it may be, you know, backlash or something, but you got to give AJ some kind of win here, you know, especially if you want him to be in that top mix, if you want him to contend for one of the championships and be a challenger, he's got to win at some point. So that could be another reason why. But that's the WrestleMania card for tonight. I will be live on YouTube as I was last night. As soon as the show is over, we had a great stream last night. We had a lot of people. We had a little over 4,000 at one point. Not that much less even still at like 3 o'clock in the morning. People were hanging on. And so I hope to see all of you back tonight. I did not get to watch the entire NXT Stand and Deliver show. I wanted to make sure I watched the main event and the women's match at least. I ended up watching three of the matches on the show. I thought Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams had a very good match in the main event. It was not the best match on the show, but they had a very good match. You could see the star potential written all over Trick. Trick picks up the biggest win of his career. I know he's been North American champion before, but this was a Stand and Deliver main event on WrestleMania weekend. Title or no title, this was the biggest win of his career so far. I don't think he's going anywhere yet. Carmelo Hayes, though, should be on the main roster as soon as this week. We've already seen him on SmackDown in the past. Very inconsistent. Now, though, I think it's time for the full-time call-up. Which brand he'll end up on, I don't know. Is he going to be a heel or a babyface? Don't know. You know, Bron Breakker had been a heel in NXT, and they called him up, and he was a babyface. So, whatever role Triple H has in mind for him. I'd like to see him stay a heel, personally. We also had, speaking of heels, Roxanne Perez, with her new attitude over the past few months. She is once again the NXT Women's Champion with a win over Lyra Valkyria. I thought they had a very good match. But the match that I think, and I have not seen all the matches on the card, so this is only based on these three. But the match that I think stole the show was actually the North American title match. It was a triple threat with Oba Femi defending against Dijak and Josh Briggs. Oba Femi, I mean, I know he's a big guy, but like he is a beast, and they've got something big in this man. He's made a lot of progress in a relatively short period of time that I've seen him. But I thought that was an excellent match. But the show also made some news for a couple of different reasons. We had the first WWE on-camera appearance and acknowledgement of Julia, who flew over from Japan to be part of the festivities this weekend. She was shown on camera in the crowd next to William Regal and former Stardom owner and booker Rossi Ogawa. They were all sitting next to each other, and then Julia and Regal stood up, put the camera on her, right? They used to do that all the time at the NXT TakeOver shows. They would debut somebody new. You'd first see them sitting in the crowd, right? They did that with Keith Lee and Matt Riddle and a whole bunch of different people. Bobby Roode. So she got the TakeOver treatment. She was also backstage at WrestleMania last night. She snapped a photo with Triple H. According to Corey Brennan of Fightful Select, multiple sources within NXT have indicated that Julia will be joining WWE's Performance Center and NXT after fulfilling her remaining commitments elsewhere. However, an immediate debut on the main roster is not in the cards. While Julia's English language skills have been improving, which is viewed positively by WWE officials, it is noted that there are no significant concerns in this regard. Previously, there were rumors circulating in the industry about Julia's in-ring style being too stiff. However, such concerns are reportedly not shared within WWE, with several sources dismissing these rumors. And there were a lot of reports about there being issues with her and certain women, or certain women having issues with her on the AEW roster, as why the company did not express any interest in signing her, which I always thought was very strange. So clearly there's some issue there that kind of scared Tony Khan off from making a big play for her. But Corey also made it very clear that this does not change the fact that she will be helping Rossi get his new promotion off the ground in Japan. He's starting a new promotion. You know, Stardom fired him. There were, you know, reports from their end that he was poaching talent, and he denies that. Anyway, he's starting his own company. And there was a lot of women in the promotion in Stardom who are very loyal to him, and as their contracts expire, will likely be migrating over to his new company. Julia feels a great sense of loyalty to him, wants to help him get it off the ground, and the plan would then be, in a matter of months, probably the next few months, for her to then officially join the NXT roster. So the way that I read this is, she's already signed with WWE. They don't put her on TV and the handshake photo with Triple H and everything, but especially putting her on camera and acknowledging her like that, unless they have a deal done. But her actual debut is still probably many months away. It was a similar thing with Kairi Sane. You know, when she came back, I think we first heard that they signed her. I don't remember what month it was, but it was months before we saw her make her return in Saudi Arabia. So Julia's in. It's just a matter of when they choose to bring her over. Starting her in NXT, I know some people are going to think, why would you start her in NXT? She's great, right? I think it's the smart move, right? Look, it surely benefited Asuka, or at least it didn't hurt Asuka when she started there. She went undefeated. She was a killer in NXT. When she debuted on the main roster, she was still undefeated until Charlotte Flair took care of that. But that run in NXT that Asuka had was iconic for her. Even though people at that time thought that it was beneath her to do so, right? It worked out well for her. And same with Io Sky. I expect the same from Julia. She'll get probably a relatively short run. It could be 6 months. It could be a year. There are certain things that you need to get acclimated to being in a new country, a new company, the way things work, the camera angles, all kinds of stuff. And so she'll be able to work all that out in NXT. I'm sure she'll be pushed very hard, probably very similar to how Asuka was pushed. And then when she's ready and they're ready for her, she'll have a spot waiting for her on Raw or SmackDown. Julia's great. I think she's going to do very well. She's got a tremendous amount of appeal. You know, we talk about how marketable Jade Cargill is, right? She looks like a comic book character come to life. She just looks like a star. Julia is not as physically big as Jade Cargill is, but Julia, I put in the same category where you look at her and she looks like a star. And you can just look at her and know, okay, this is someone who is going to be very easy to market on the main roster to the audience. They're going to look at this woman when they see her work. They're going to look at her matches and they're going to know, okay, this woman right here, this is something special. So she's going to be just fine. Also on the show, I said the show made news. Other than Julia's appearance, the NXT general manager Ava announced a new Women's North American Championship is coming soon. Now, with all the talent they have in that women's division, and with them having gotten rid of the tag belts, they had merged them a while ago, this makes sense. This is a prelude, I think, to a women's intercontinental title on the main roster. And NXT is a great place to experiment with different ideas. They have the division for it. I would rather see them junk the women's tag belts altogether on the main roster if they do introduce a secondary title, you know, and then maybe start with one. I just talked about this in the mailbag a few weeks ago. Start out with a women's intercontinental title. Seriously, junk the tag belts. Start out with a women's IC title. And, you know, let the champion float, see how that goes, and they could always introduce a women's U.S. title later on also if they want more. Look, they're going to have more women from NXT get called up in the months and the years ahead. As stockpiled as they are right now with that PC, those women eventually will be on Raw, they will be on SmackDown, you're still going to have a lot of the existing women, those divisions will grow, and as they expand, then it might make sense to introduce secondary titles on both shows. But I think starting out with one would be fine. They're going to try it in NXT here. We'll see how that goes. The WWE Hall of Fame ceremony was held on Friday night after SmackDown. Lots of names in attendance, including Stephanie McMahon, who was in the front row next to Triple H wearing her old ECW beret from her days as the owner of ECW during the invasion. The dark days, as I like to think of it. Haku was sitting in the front row next to The Rock's mother. Rikishi was there as well. RVD, the Dudleys, Tommy Dreamer, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, Lita. One name I was very happy to see was Ken Shamrock. And I didn't see where he was in the crowd. I saw a photo that was taken backstage with a bunch of people. He was in it. I was very happy to see that. And I think he may have signed a Legends deal recently because they started marketing some merch and t-shirts for him. So I knew there was some kind of a deal in place. But he was sort of persona non grata for so many years there. And he was of the impression that he was basically blackballed from the company for whatever reason. And he said that he didn't get along with Triple H and maybe that had something to do with it. So I'm glad that he's back in the fold. And it would not surprise me in the next couple of years to see him go into the Hall of Fame. You know, he was a big part of the Attitude Era period. You know, and he had success. He was an Intercontinental Champion, a Tag Team Champion. And was part of those Lion's Den matches, which were innovative for WWE at that time. So I wouldn't mind seeing him get a Hall of Fame induction at some point. The Rock was there, not only to induct his grandmother, Leah Maivia, but to accept the People's Championship from Muhammad Ali's wife after she was done giving the acceptance speech for her husband. She brought up the fact that The Rock asked Ali for his blessing in 1998 to use the People's Champion name while he was in the Nation of Domination. And it seemed very out of place to turn this into a presentation to give The Rock a belt, which he carried with him last night, like he was actually the champion. Which he may as well be. I have to say, that Brahma Bull belt that he was carrying around looks even better than the mustard belt that Roman Reigns is carrying around, which isn't saying much because the logo belts are... We don't need to get into that. But I just love how the belt that he has looks so much better than the actual WWE title. And the thing I love about it also, it's got three plates on either side. Like the belts they have these days, I hate the one plate on each side. They look like toys. So I love the belt. I just don't know why he needs one. Undertaker gave the introduction speech for Ali. We did get one Vince McMahon mentioned during Rock's speech for his grandmother when he was running through the names of various promoters. He mentioned Vince and his name got booed. The New Day inducted Thunderbolt Patterson. It was very cool to see him get up out of his wheelchair when he got wheeled out and walk over to Gerald Briscoe, his former tag team partner. They shared a moment together, the original Patterson and Briscoe. Medusa did the induction for Bull Nakano, her former foe in the ring. They gave Bull Nakano the Orient Express theme music. Of course they did. It was cool to see her get her flowers. That was a very nice speech I thought that she gave. Barry Windham and Mike Rotunda, the U.S. Express, were inducted by Mike's kids, Taylor and Micah. And at the end of their speech, Mike Rotunda picked up his phone and led the crowd in putting their flashlights on their phones in tribute to his son Wyndham, Bray Wyatt. Now, I did get to watch the Bray Wyatt documentary on Peacock. I just did not get a chance with everything going on to record an extra on it. I doubt that I will, but it was very well done. I figure I'll talk about it here. Very well done. We learned that he hated the Husky Harris character. He's not alone in that. A lot of people did not like that character, but he knew that it was poking fun at his weight. It was very demeaning. The Uncle Howdy character and the mask was based on a nightmare that Bray had as a child. That was the genesis of it. And we got never-before-seen footage all throughout the documentary. And it was footage of Bray behind the scenes and collaborating on certain ideas. We got a never-before-seen look, though, also at the new Fiend character that Bray was about to unveil before he got sick. It was like basically an updated version of the old Fiend costume and mask, but it was somehow even creepier than the original. But there was a ton of unreleased footage of Wyndham behind the scenes. Very cool to see that, including how tough it was for him to walk around wearing that charred Fiend costume when he came back after the Fiend got burned. He hated it. He hated working in it. The most emotional part was the ending, obviously, and they do get into what happened with his health at the end there in those final months. And it was impossible for me to keep it together when they got to the part with him getting COVID before WrestleMania 39 and then everything that followed right on through his heart issues and the day that he died. And, you know, watching JoJo and his dad and Taylor, Bo Dallas, describing that day and being in the hospital when they got the news, when they got the call, and then they got to the hospital and they got the news from the doctor that he was gone. It was just heartbreaking. You know, it was heartbreaking to see. When they found him in his bed at home, he was not wearing the medical vest that he was supposed to be wearing. It was meant to send an electrical shock to his heart if it stopped beating. His mother was also interviewed for the documentary. His mother said she didn't know why he wasn't wearing it. But when he laid down that day to take a nap, he had picked up his kids from school. You know, his ex-wife said, "Would you pick up the kids?" He said, "Sure." He picked them up. Evidently, he wasn't wearing it. There's a very good chance that he would still be alive today if he was, right? Impossible to know for sure, 100%, but a pretty good chance he would still be here if he was wearing that vest. And it could have been something as simple as him forgetting. You know, he picked his kids up from school. Maybe he left it in his car, right? I mean, there's any number of reasons that could have been, other than him just not wanting to. We just don't know. We'll never know. It's all very sad either way that here you have a life after only 36 years on this earth cut short like that. You know, he still had so much left to do in his life. It's still very eerie to me that you had the Wyatt family. And you think of the original three members of that crew. Two of them are gone at a very young age for reasons that are the polar opposite of what you would normally expect when you hear about a young wrestler death. Because there have been so many young wrestler deaths over the years. Especially you hear about it a lot the last 20, 25 years. A lot of older wrestlers from back then whose lifestyles caught up to them and passed away in their 40s and in their 50s. And you have other wrestlers who die earlier than that, you know, in their 30s. And you hear about drug overdoses and you hear about accidents and just all kinds of stuff. Suicides, all kinds of things. And in this case, you have two members of this particular faction. One who dies of a very weird medical illness that they said was not COVID, but it was something respiratory. And you have, you know, John Huber, you have, you know, Luke Harper, who dies in the hospital in a situation that you think back to it, it was just almost like it didn't feel real. Like, how did this happen? How did he get so sick? What was it? How did this happen? And that's how he dies. And Bray, you can tell from the documentary, was deeply affected by his death. And then Bray passes away. You know, he gets COVID, he has a heart issue, and he passes away from that. And it's just very strange. It's just very, very eerie. And I feel bad for Eric Rowan now, who's the last surviving member of the original Wyatt family, Braun Strowman. Obviously, he was brought in later on. He was interviewed. He was also very broken up by what happened. But just so much left in his life to do. And, you know, Bray had four little kids, I think four. And he was about to get married to JoJo a few months after he passed away. And just, boom, just like that, you know, it's all taken away. I will say this, the one saving grace, and it's weird to say this because him being released in 2021 really sent him into a depression. And it shocked a lot of people, myself included, when I saw his name on the cut list. In hindsight, I'm really glad that happened. I'm glad that it happened because when they brought him back the following year, the fans really embraced him. And in that time period that he was gone from 2021, summer of 2021 into 2022, he would be, you know, he would run into fans or be contacted by fans constantly on social media. Oh, I miss you. Oh, I can't wait. You know, we love you. We miss you. We can't wait to see you back. And he seemed genuinely moved by the show of love from the fans, even when he came back. And he got that huge reaction at Extreme Rules. And he came back on SmackDown that Friday, and he stood in the ring by himself, and he cut that promo, and the fans just really embraced him. And he seemed genuinely moved by the show of love the people gave him on that SmackDown show when he spoke from the heart, just as himself, as Wyndham for the first time, not as a character. He got to feel the love from the fans that night and in the months before they brought him back. So often when somebody dies, people say nice things about them after the fact. Or they say nice things about them at their funeral. But they don't get to hear it, right? It only happens after they're gone. He got to experience firsthand how much he was loved by so many people. And that's my one happy takeaway from that whole thing. But then at the very end of the documentary, they slipped in an extra scene showing Bray's lantern. They zoomed in on it. Then the screen begins to glitch out. And then we get a very brief, quick shot of Uncle Howdy before it cuts to black. Bo Dallas has been under contract for a while now. They brought him back to be Uncle Howdy. And then Bray died. He's been under contract this entire time. And it looks like they're going to continue to use him in that role still, which will be another way to keep Bray's memory alive by, you know, taking one of his characters and breathing new life into it and keeping it going. And you could tell by listening to Bo throughout the documentary how close they were, how broken up he still is about Bray's death. It'll be nice for him to keep one of those characters alive and see what he can do with it, you know, on his own. And also, if Alexa Bliss, when she comes back, if she plays a role in any of that, are they going to put the two of them together? You know, is she going to still be playing spooky Alexa? Is she going to have some kind of tie into this? Because she'll be back. I don't know when she'll be back exactly, but I would imagine that we'll see her back on TV very soon. Because I know it's been a number of months since she had her kid, and she's talked about how she's not done. She's going to come back, and we'll see if they tie her into this in any way. But the main attraction at the Hall of Fame was Paul Heyman, who they sent out there first to open the show, probably to make sure he had plenty of time. And he did not disappoint. No surprise that the greatest communicator in the history of the business went out and gave one of the best Hall of Fame speeches that I've ever heard. It's up there with Bobby Heenan and The Undertaker as one of my favorites. I love that he came out to the old ECW theme song. It's going to be great tonight when they trot all the Hall of Famers out there and they save him for last and give him the big entrance, and they play that old ECW theme in that big stadium in Philadelphia, and he walks out there. So it was great to hear that song again. He pointed out his kids in the front row. He has a son and a daughter. I don't think I've ever seen them before. It's the first time I've actually seen what they look like. First thing he did was put over Triple H. He said that this was the first class, and he was the first inductee in a Hall of Fame picked by Paul Levesque. And he praised his leadership and the fact that there is a creative freedom now behind the scenes that was not there before. And he said he will forever be a Paul Levesque guy. I love how everyone openly acknowledges just how much better things are now without Vince McMahon at the helm. Then he pointed out Stephanie in the crowd and said she married the wrong Paul. Imagine that combo. What if Paul Heyman and Stephanie McMahon had gotten together? Ugh. He talked to his kids, he told them to pursue their dreams and what makes them happy, and if anybody messes with them, Haku is only two seats over. That was great. And then he said, with all the mushy stuff out of the way, it's time to talk about ECW. And there was a box that was sitting there on the podium, on the stand in front of him. And he opens the box, the cardboard box, and he pulls out a long black leather jacket, similar to the one he used to wear in the ECW days, and he puts it on over his suit coat. And then he pulls out a headset, places it around his neck, just like in the ECW days. And he pulls out the old cordless phone from the Paul E days. He said this was the phone he used to bash Sting over the head with once. And then he put on an ECW hat, and you looked at him, and it was like he stepped into a time warp. He said in 1993, the wrestling industry sucked. He mentioned wrestling plumbers and terrible gimmicks from the WWF days, even though that was 95, but that's being nitpicky. He said WCW wouldn't listen to him, so he needed to find a place that would accept his vision. And he mentioned that they could not have done it anywhere else but here in Philadelphia. He talked about WCW getting its idea for cruiserweights from ECW. He talked about how Steve Austin drank his first beer in ECW. And he said he disagrees with the sentiment that ECW is gone. It's still alive in the matches that we see today, and the spirit of ECW is still very much alive. He said, if you think that ECW died in a bankruptcy court in 2001, you can, and excuse my language here, but you can suck my fucking dick. There's a phrase I never thought I would hear on a WWE broadcast. Actually, I didn't hear it. They bleeped it out, but the fact that he even said it is just wild. But it's exactly the sort of speech I was hoping we would get from Paul Heyman. This is the face of ECW. They're in Philadelphia. It could not be any other way. You can't have a sanitized PG Paul Heyman speech in Philadelphia. He said CM Punk leaned over and told his son, after he made the comment, he said Punk leaned over and told his son, your dad is getting canceled. Heyman says he cannot be canceled. He will always find his way back. And he goes through all the different ways that he came back over the years, managing the Samoan SWAT team, and then he managed Mean Mark, who went on to become The Undertaker, and the Dangerous Alliance, and then he went to ECW, and when he was canceled there, he came to WWE, and he got canceled, and then he came back with Brock Lesnar. So there's your Brock mention. They may have kept him out of the introduction video, but there was no way Paul Heyman was giving a Hall of Fame speech and not mentioning Brock Lesnar. And you have to. He was such an instrumental part of Paul's career, that second half of his career. And Brock is going to be back eventually anyway. I mean, Triple H was asked about Brock at the post-show press conference last night. He is still under contract. He just said Brock is at home doing Brock things. Brock will be back. It's only a matter of time. Heyman said he was canceled as an executive director of Raw, and he was rescued by Roman Reigns. And his message tonight to everybody is, they can't cancel you, only you can let them cancel you. He says he has the honor of working with Roman Reigns and the Usos and Solo and a Samoan dynasty that will rule for hundreds of years to come. Well, there it is. A few hundred more years of this bloodline story then. He said today he gets to work with Bron Breakker and Rhea Ripley and Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams and Jade Cargill, or Cargill as he called her. We have Adam Copeland saying Will Ospreay, and we have Paul Heyman saying Jade Cargill. And he says that he sees in them the things that he saw in big names like CM Punk and Steve Austin and Becky Lynch and Seth Rollins and Charlotte Flair. And then he wrapped up his Paul of Fame speech, as he called it, with, I'm blown up, I have to pee, and I've taken too long. Yo, bitches, I'm just getting started. You ain't seen nothing yet. He says he will disrupt the business all over again, and that is not a prediction, that is a spoiler. It was an authentic Paul Heyman speech, and if you're a Heyman fan, then I think you got exactly what you were hoping for. And he went into this with no notes. He said coming in, I'm just going to wing it. I'm going to get a feel of the room, and we're just going to wing it. But here's a guy, you know, in Paul Heyman, who has done it all. I mean, he really has. He has done it all in the wrestling industry. Photographer, manager, booker, writer, general manager, executive director, advocate, wise man, whatever you want to call him. He has played every part. He has filled every role. He wasn't the best businessman, but he's got a great mind for the business that very few people have. And he's got a mouth for it too. Made a lot of money with it. And I know he didn't want to go into the Hall of Fame until he was retired, but as he said, why did he change his mind? Two things. The idea of him being the first name handpicked by Triple H for his Hall of Fame, and the fact that it was in Philadelphia. It just felt right. The downside to him going on first, nobody was going to top him. And nobody did. This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. I spend a lot of time on my phone, probably more than I should, checking messages, posting on social media, ordering things, playing games, streaming music. The scary part is that our phone carriers, and I say our, because that includes yours, all collect data on everything we do. Verizon even admitted to doing so. They say it's because they want to better understand our interests. But let's be honest. They really want to sell our activity to advertisers and make money off of it. This is why I use ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is an app that prevents your phone carrier from being able to see the sites that you visit and then sell that information off to third parties. All you do is tap one button and all of your network data gets encrypted and rerouted through ExpressVPN servers for ultimate privacy. Not only does it shield your web browsing, ExpressVPN protects all of your network data so you can stay private even when using your favorite apps. It doesn't matter if you're an iPhone, Android, or tablet user, ExpressVPN works on all your devices. And the best part is that one subscription can be used on up to 5 devices at the same time. So you could have your entire family using ExpressVPN. When your phone carrier tracks you, that's a gross invasion of privacy. You can either keep letting them cash in on you, or you can visit expressvpn.com/solomonster to get the same VPN I use. Take back your online privacy today and use my link to get 3 extra months free. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster. expressvpn.com/Solomonster. CM Punk appeared on the MMA Hour with Ariel Helwani last Monday, and as is usually the case when Punk speaks, all hell has broken loose. It made headlines for all the obvious reasons, none of which had anything to do with WrestleMania. Sort of reminded me of what happens to AEW a lot, right? It happened during MJF's run as champion, where the weekend of a pay-per-view, there would always be some kind of drama that drew attention away from the show. Now, WrestleMania is big enough that that was never going to happen here. But Ariel did spend a lot of time with him asking about what happened in AEW. And I thought he did a good job of asking the kinds of questions that people would want answers to. And Punk was more open and forthcoming with his answers than I thought he would legally be able to be, you know, for all this talk about NDAs. He did say there were NDAs signed relative to Brawl Out in 2022, so he couldn't talk about that, but he spoke on everything else, from the incident at Wembley with Jack Perry, the events leading up to it with the glass spot, his thoughts on Tony Khan as a boss, and Colt Cabana. My overall thoughts are that it was nice to get Punk's point of view on things, because we have not had a chance to hear from him publicly about this, only what he and his friends would leak to Nick Hausman. My opinion of his behavior in all of this remains unchanged. There's a lot of what he said here that I do agree with. That is a very bad look for Tony Khan and AEW. But my opinion on the way that he acted and AEW firing him, that hasn't changed. My opinion of Jack Perry, not so much, if what Punk said here is true. And my opinion of Tony Khan's role in this and the Elite is also unchanged. And that's not to absolve them of, you know, anything, because there are no completely innocent parties here. Not CM Punk, not the Elite, not Hangman Page, and not Tony Khan, especially Tony Khan. And I think Cody Rhodes summed it up well on Ariel's show on Wednesday when he was asked about what Punk said. And Cody said it all comes down to miscommunication. I would say a lack of communication more than a miscommunication. And this is coming from someone with a communications background. That's what started this entire thing. And Tony Khan allowed it to fester enough to the point where it was like a powder keg, which eventually exploded. More than once, in fact. This could have been handled in the spring of 2022. And here we are in the spring of 2024 with CM Punk back on the WWE roster. How did we get here that we are still talking about this shit? Let's start with the AEW stuff. And this, and again, I just for the record here, because I did not have time to get into this during the week. I did see the entire interview. I watched it all for myself. I heard everything he had to say, and he talked a lot about WWE and his return, and I'm not getting into any of that. I want to focus on some very specific things AEW related that he talked about here. And we're going to start with Ariel asking him about his arrival in London for All In, because this was a story at the time. Remember, Punk was photographed, or he was taking the tube, he was taking the train to the show because there was no car there to pick him up from the airport. Punk said, there's nobody there to pick me up, and it's not a big deal. I just got on the tube, and I was like, adventure, and you have to figure it out for yourself. That part was fun, but it's completely irresponsible as a company to leave somebody stranded at the airport. But I understand the sentiments, people, all the smarties on Twitter, oh, can't you just take an Uber, the crybaby. I never cried about it once. I'm still the guy when I fly in and out of Chicago, I take the blue line home. I'm not trying to be super fancy and shit like that. I don't know if he was told that there would be a car there to pick him up and then there wasn't, or if he just assumed that there would be because there was in the past. If he was told that there was and then there wasn't, he would have every right to be upset. I'd be pissed about that too. If not, I still think that you have a car there to pick up your top star. I don't see it as anything super fancy. You know, Tony Khan would not let the guy go the first time when he claims he wanted to quit, and Tony said no because he needed him for Collision. Without CM Punk, there is no Collision. If you have a star that is that valuable to you in your eyes, then send a fucking car to pick him up at the airport when he lands in a foreign country. It's not that hard. I still don't think there was any grand conspiracy, though, on the part of the EVPs to cancel the man's travel just to fuck with him. Because I know that was a popular conspiracy theory that, oh, there was the reason there was no car is because of the Bucks. They, you know, manipulated the travel itinerary, or they said, hey, make sure there's no car there. I don't buy that. I don't believe that to be the case. Then Ariel asked him about Jack Perry's match with Hook at Wembley, and him looking into the camera and saying, real glass, cry me a river, after he did that spot on top of the car. Punk said he was in his locker room when it happened, and he said it was obviously directed at him. He said, Tony's big idea was separate shows. We're going to separate everybody. And I said, that'll never work. Just let me go. Just get me out of here. Pay me my money. I've already been off TV. I hurt this arm. Just get me out of here. And he said, no, can't let you go. Why? Just let me go. Who cares? These guys don't want me here. This isn't a real business. This is not a business predicated on making money, drawing money, selling tickets, doing business. It's not what it was sold to me as, so let me go. Let's stop there. I said the minute that it was reported that Tony Khan was going to separate the rosters and have Punk on Saturdays with his people and the Elite on Wednesdays with theirs, that it was a terrible idea that would never, ever work. Punk is correct. He was smart enough to know that also. Unless they all agreed to sit down in a room together and at least agree to coexist and be cordial with each other. And even then, there was no trust. And once that trust is gone and that trust is broken and you got to walk around with eyes in the back of your fucking head, it just doesn't work. You can't work in an environment like that. I don't care what business or company or industry that you're in. You could be behind a desk working a 9-to-5 job. If you don't trust the people that you work with, you're not going to be there for very long. Because that's not a way to work. So this was only ever going to end in disaster, whether it was at Wembley or some other time. Punk was right. Tony should have let him go then. But Collision was predicated on Punk being the face of the show. And without him, there would be no Collision. But Punk is the one who went off in the Brawl Out scrum. Punk is the one who, by most accounts, threw the first punch backstage in Chicago. Tony Khan getting rid of his two EVPs and keeping Punk was not going to happen. So he had to make a choice. Instead, he thought he could put a Band-Aid on a gunshot wound. That doesn't work. That never works. Punk saying that AEW is not a real business and that it's not predicated on making money or drawing money, that to me is largely just him lashing out at the Bucks, not wanting to do business with him after Brawl Out, so that they could all work together and they could all make money. AEW is a 5-year-old company making millions of dollars off of its television deal with a possible renewal coming in the next several months. 70,000 plus tickets sold to Wembley Stadium last year. Another 40,000 plus already sold for this year's show. They employ so many people right now that they only now are starting to cut people and scale back. You can't say that it's not a real business. You can disagree with Tony Khan's approach. And I'm going to get into the roster cuts that were made this week and some comments that he made a little bit later on. I thought that were completely tone deaf. We'll talk about that later. You can talk about the emphasis on dream matches over storylines that draw people in. They have stories. They're just not all very good ones. It does feel like Tony is more interested in booking fantasy matches for hardcore fans and that he himself wants to see. It feels like he's using AEW as his own e-wrestling simulator. And that's fine sometimes, but it comes at the expense of more interesting stories. Stories that draw you in and engage you. I actually think, one thing that they could borrow from WWE and maybe make it even better is their use of backstage segments to tell stories. The typical backstage segment in AEW involves one person being interviewed or one team being interviewed. And then maybe you have people interrupting them. Rarely, though, on TV. Maybe they do this on social media. But rarely on TV do we get segments where you need to pretend that the camera is not there. It's like we're kind of eavesdropping on something that we're not supposed to be seeing. WWE has done a great job of using those segments, for example, to tell the Bloodline story. Especially when Sami Zayn first started hanging around, right? Remember when Roman Reigns let him in for the first time into his locker room and they're sitting on the couch and... like, those segments were fucking gold. Those were some of the most entertaining segments that they did. That's where a lot of the storytelling came from. We don't get that in AEW. And I think it's a missed opportunity for them to use those segments to better flesh out a lot of these characters. Like, they'll come out and, Justin Roberts will introduce them and I know who they are. But that's it. And that may be the only time we see them on the entire show. Because you got to fit so many people on the show. And they don't take the time to really flesh these characters out in those types of scenes in the way that they should. WWE did something once on SmackDown many years ago, like 20 years ago. And then they never did it again. I would imagine because it's a hard thing to shoot. But I would love to see AEW or another wrestling promotion try this again. where it was like one continuous shot that started in the back with one segment, and then it bled into another, and then another, and then another, one right after the other. Like one person would walk off, like they have a conversation with someone, and they walk off down the hallway. And you see them walking down the hallway, but then as they're walking away, they walk past the conversation that's happening between two other wrestlers. And then we just very seamlessly pick up with that shot. Like that was innovative at the time. And then they never did it again. But that's the sort of thing that I think would really benefit AEW from a storytelling perspective. And I know this is not going to sit well with some AEW fans who are just going to dismiss it as, oh, you just want them to copy WWE. No, I want them to borrow from something that works and make it their own. But to Punk's point, no wrestling company, I don't care how rich the owner is, falls ass backwards into all of these things that AEW has been able to do in its first 5 years. All of these accomplishments that the TNAs and the Ring of Honors of the world would have killed for in their first 5 years. That WWE would have killed for it its first 5 years. You know, we forget sometimes the company is like 75 fucking years old. So you can't just kind of wave your hand and dismiss all of that. Well, they're not a real business. They're not in it to make money. All these things that they have done and they have accomplished wouldn't happen unless they were doing a good job of building a business. Now, again, you may disagree with the approach. You may think, why is Tony doing it this way when he could be making more money by doing it that way? AEW may not be profitable yet, but they could be. They could be one TV rights renewal away from being a profitable company in the next few months. And to just dismiss that as, oh, they're not a real business and they're not in it to make money is wrong. Punk wanted to turn it all into a storyline with the Elite and make money off of it. They didn't want to, so he lashes out and says they're not a real business. My stance was and has always been, and if you've listened to any of these rants about this, and I'm so fucking tired that we're even still talking about this shit, but my stance has been consistent on this from day one, that the Young Bucks, as EVPs in the company, had a responsibility to at least sit down in a room with Punk and Tony Khan and the lawyers, if need be, have a little mediation session, and hear the man out. Because it was always Punk. The reports were that Punk wants the meeting. Punk wants the meeting. The Bucks don't. Now, if at the end of that meeting, had they taken it, if they still had no interest in doing business with this man, that's their call. But I think that if you have talent that is doubling as executives in the company, that is very different than Darby Allin, let's say, getting into a fight with CM Punk and then saying, I don't want to work with this guy. Even though Punk and Darby is a feud that you know could make them money. The Bucks are in a unique position, them and Kenny. They are EVPs, which means they need to consider what's best for the entire company and not just themselves. They're smart enough to know that this segregated roster stuff was never going to work. Punk was reportedly willing to meet with them. They were not willing to meet with him. Take the meeting. Hear what he has to say, and then decide what you want to do. They didn't do that. They ghosted him. With these claims like, oh, you're not allowed to. The lawyers say you can't talk to each other. Give me a fucking break. But I think that's really what Punk is sore about more than anything else. Now, on the events that led up to the Jack Perry altercation, it dates back to Collision, an episode of Collision and the Real Glass incident. Now, according to Punk's version of events, he's sitting in catering one day. He's minding his own business. And Tony Schiavone comes in and he gets Punk and says, hey, I really need your help. Jack is cussing me out. He's cussed out Mike Mansuri. He's cussed out Daryl from production. He's cussing out the doctor right now. Why? And Punk says, I was immediately like, dude, he isn't supposed to be here because he's a Young Bucks guy. He should be on Wednesdays. He goes, he's not supposed to be here. I was told people are getting separated, so there's no problems. And you don't want me involved in this because if you don't handle it, I'm going to handle it and you're not going to like the way that I handle it. So according to him, Schiavone keeps on begging him now, please, please, please. So he drags Punk out of catering and Hook and Jack Perry are shooting an angle. And he says, I don't know anything about Jack going on vacation, which was, again, that's the whole situation was that Jack was going on vacation, apparently. I don't know for how long, but he was going on vacation and he wanted to do some kind of an angle involving Real Glass and a car. Punk says there are a litany of people that work one day a week and they don't want to, so they want to show up and wrestle and then film vignettes and then sit at home for 4 weeks. Great. Not my company, do what you want, but not on my show. That was my attitude. I walked up to Jack, he was sitting in a car. What he wanted to do, it was a rental car, was smash the window of the car with a pipe. And I was like, it's a rental car. And I very politely, because I like Jack, I was like, Doc has told you no. Daryl has told you no. Mike has told you no. Shivani's told you no. And now I have to tell you no. And apparently you've cussed them all out. So I'm telling you no. We don't do that here. If you want to do this, go to Wednesday and do it. He had no problem. He said, okay, I just thought it was a really cool idea. And I said, well, it might be, but this is a rental car. Boys ruin it for the boys. You're going to smash the window of a rental car and you're going to return it with no fucking window. And now whatever, national budget hurts, whatever, is going to be like, don't rent cars to pro wrestlers anymore. This is a thing that's happened. Wasn't trying to throw my weight around. I wasn't like, hey, this is my show and you got to get out of here. I was like, this is fucking dumb. To come to this new show when everybody is supposed to be separated, to get rid of all the drama, and then swearing at the doctor because the doctor's like, hey, it's real glass. Shit's going to go in your eye. And I get it. I used to be that kid that was like young and I want to do this, but there's a safe way to do it. I politely explained that to him. I didn't raise my voice. I didn't cuss at him. I was just like, I very much just said, we don't do that here. This is Saturday. It's a different show. You want to do stuff like this, do it on Wednesday. And that was it. I didn't think there was going to be a problem. He obviously took something very business-minded, very personally, and that's fine because I've done that before too. But it's very much who he's friends with, and shit never got squashed. Nobody's in charge, and it turned into what it turned into. Now, Conrad Thompson on his podcast with Shivani asked Tony if the story was true. Tony didn't deny it, but he also wasn't happy about any of this. He said, did he have a couple of stories about me? Jungle Boy, right? You know what? I really don't give a shit about it. I'm not going to get into this. I know what he said. And let him continue to talk if he wants. That's all I got. I can't get into it. It would be stupid for me to get into any of this. If we take Punk's comments at face value, and I really have no reason to think that Punk would be making this part up. Tony Schiavone, not thinking it was a good idea, by the way, was one of the versions that was reported at the time. So I can believe that Schiavone would have gone to him and said, hey, I need your help, and you know, we got a problem here. So if all of that is true, then Jack Perry sounds like a prima donna who thinks that he is a lot bigger than he really is. You know, why is he going around cussing everybody out if that's what he's doing? And if Tony Schiavone is so distressed over it that he has to go find and beg CM Punk to do something about it, obviously that's very inappropriate for Jack Perry to be doing that, and he sounds like a dick. But there's a bigger question here. Why is Tony Schiavone going to CM Punk? Right? Punk may be the face of the show. I mean, Punk said it there himself. This is my show, right? Okay. Well, it is, but it isn't. It's really not your show. You might be the reason that there is a show in the first place, but it's not your show. It's Tony Khan's show. So why is Tony Schiavone going to CM Punk and not going to his boss? Tony Khan is at every single show. They don't do house shows. There are no shows where Tony Khan is not present with a headset around his neck. Go find Tony Khan and let Tony Khan deal with it. If you have a talent that is being abusive or, you know, difficult to work with. You know, it's one thing if there's a disagreement over a spot, like some kind of creative disagreement. Hey, Punk, can you go talk to Jack about it? Fine. What Punk is describing here, again, if it was any other business and one of your workers was going around cussing people out, it would be dealt with by management or that person would be fired. It's like I said before, nobody is innocent in this. Then came Wembley. Jack Perry, during his match with Hook after a spot on a car, looks into the camera and says, real glass, cry me a river. Punk sees this and he goes to Tony Khan. He said, I was like, please handle that, please. And he was like, what do you want me to do? I was like, I'm not telling you what to do. Just be the boss, please. I'm tired of this shit. I told you this was a mistake. I told you separate shows wasn't going to work. And now we're all here. And please handle it. Jack came back from his match. I was the next match. I'm sitting there. I got people with me. I'm not going to say who they are. I got a lot of friends who work there. I don't want to get them in trouble. I walk up to him and I'm just like, Jack, why do you insist on doing this dumb internet shit like this on TV? And he's like, if you got a problem with it, do something about it. And I was like, man, come on. I would fucking kill you. What are we doing here? I thought I was doing the responsible thing. I didn't punch anybody. I just choked somebody a little bit. Samoa Joe was there, told me to stop. Then I quit. I turned to Tony. I said, this place is a fucking joke. You're a clown. I quit. I went to my room, and then Joe and Jerry Lynn came and got me, and they're like, let's just go out there and kill it. And I was just like, this is the last time I'm ever going to wrestle Samoa Joe. This is my last match in this company. I quit. I said I fucking quit. And Helwani asked him, so then why did you go out there? And Punk said, for Joe. For Joe, for Paul Turner, the referee, for Jerry Lynn, the agent on the match, because I respect him, and I thought it was the professional thing to do. All the fans, a lot of fans there, probably a lot of them to see me. So just go out there and give them a show. And on how Punk would describe working for Tony Khan, he said, he's not a boss, he's a nice guy, and I think ultimately that is a detriment to the company. But it's not my company. I thought I was brought in to sell merchandise and tickets and draw numbers for pay-per-views and stuff, and I clearly did that, but that's not what the place was about, and some people didn't like that. That really is the key part of the interview. Let's go back to the altercation here. Punk thought that he was doing the responsible thing by not punching Jack Perry in the face. He only choked him a little bit. Punk loses the right to take the moral high ground when he choked his coworker. This is the point that cannot be glossed over. You cannot make excuses for this. Some people simply cannot bring themselves to admit that this man bears any responsibility at all for his actions and for why he was fired. They're just ride or die to the very end. Keep in mind, Punk was fired with cause. So if he thought that he was fired unjustly, or he claims he quit, but yeah, he says he wasn't fired, but if he thought they slandered him by saying that he was fired with cause and it wasn't true, they didn't fire me, like there would have been a lawsuit. There was nothing. He had no leg to stand on. Because he choked his coworker by his own admission. And AEW has footage of what happened with Jack Perry backstage at Wembley. That was known even at the time. There was security footage. And I never thought that it would see the light of day. Of course, I'd love to see it, just like morbidly curious. Of course, I would watch it and love to see what happened there. But so much time has gone by now. Punk doesn't even work for the company anymore. It's time to move on. Unless you're Tony Khan. And here we are now with AEW on Collision last night, announcing that this Wednesday on Dynamite, the Young Bucks are going to present backstage footage from All In and will, quote, discuss it for the first time. Now, when I first read that, I didn't think it was real. I had people sending in messages while I was trying to talk about WrestleMania. Now we're talking about AEW shit on Saturday night. We're talking about fucking All In at Wembley from how many months ago? 7 months ago, whatever it was? I'm trying to review WrestleMania Night 1. I got people saying, oh, they're going to show the footage on Wednesday of Perry and Punk. And I'm like, what the fuck? So I thought it was a joke. Then I saw the announcement, and I thought, okay, well, surely it's just going to be a storyline to put heat on the Bucks, and it's going to be footage of, like, FTR or something to build heat for their match at Dynasty in 2 weeks, because FTR is in the finals of the tournament for the tag team titles. The Bucks are in the finals. They're going to be squaring off. But everybody now, from Meltzer to Sapp to Alvarez, are all consistent now in saying that the footage that is going to be airing on Wednesday is not a bait and switch. This is not a swerve. Tony Khan is actually going to air footage of the CM Punk Jack Perry incident on TV this week on TBS. And that he was very upset by Punk's comments. He wanted to show the footage previously, for whatever reason, he opted not to, and now he's using this opportunity to finally air it for the world to see. Now, Tony Khan won't say so publicly, but he was said to be very upset by Punk's interview. Of course he would be. I mean, that's hardly a shock. But he was so bothered by his comments that he sent Adam Copeland out there on Wednesday to open the show for an 8-minute rah-rah speech, to rally the troops and put over how great AEW was. Even if it was Copeland's idea, Tony Khan could have said, you know what, I appreciate that, Adam, but we're going to leave it alone and we're going to move on. We're going to look forward. He sent him out there, and it was so transparent why he did. They did not need to waste almost 10 minutes of the program defending themselves. It was embarrassing. And for all of Copeland's talk about wanting to focus on the positives of pro wrestling, because that was really the crux of his speech, there's so many good things happening right now in pro wrestling, so many fun things. Why can't we focus on the positives? And there are plenty of positives in both companies. But Tony Khan also bears some of the blame for the tribalism that exists online today, because he feeds into it with some of the comments that he makes and that the other wrestlers will make on the show in their promos occasionally when they reference WWE. You cannot in one breath say, tribalism bad, let's all hug and sing kumbaya, and then in the next breath, tweet up a storm about how sad it is that WWE had to load up NXT in October with huge stars just to pop a rating, or any number of things that Tony Khan should have just kept to himself. If that's what you want to do, then fine, go for it. But spare me the, oh, why can't everybody just be positive speech? Hey, Adam, talk to your boss. So now, 7 months later, 7 months after Tony Khan fired CM Punk, they still need him to pop a rating. All the big free agent signings have not worked, so he's using the hook of the Wembley footage and CM Punk to draw a number. It is pathetic. If Punk is lying about the way things went down and he wants to set the record straight, you know what? Put out a brief statement online addressing it. Share the video there. Them promoting it for their television show is pathetic. Like, I cannot even believe that we are sitting here in April after this happened in August. Punk is long gone, and this is what they're spending their television time on. CM Punk is going to be sitting ringside tonight for the World Heavyweight Championship match at WrestleMania, part of that whole story, and Tony Khan is getting footage, backstage footage, footage of the backstage area at Wembley Stadium in August of last year, all teed up to air on his television show here. Like, are they bringing back Jack Perry? Is he joining the Elite? I don't see how airing footage of their guy being choked out is actually going to be a benefit to him. But this whole thing is pathetic. Even if Punk is lying about the details and they want to expose him for it, this is not the way. They come off as just petty and insecure. Very insecure. Punk made the point that Tony is a nice guy, but he's a detriment to his own company. That's the sentiment of a lot of people. He seems like a nice guy, but he doesn't take charge of these situations. And, you know, if he did, a lot of this drama probably could have been avoided. I'm talking going all the way back to the Hangman workers' rights promo in May of 2022, or even before that, when these rumors started circulating in the locker room, apparently, that Punk was trying to get Colt Cabana fired, if in fact, he was not doing that. But people were hearing that, then Tony should have squashed it right then and there. As far as the Jack Perry stuff goes, we'll see what the footage shows. But it does not change the fact that CM Punk had to go. He assaulted his co-workers twice, with no evidence that anybody swung at him first, and that he was only defending himself. I mean, one incident was enough to get rid of him, and I said that after Brawl Out. I said he should be gone, after the scrum and then the backstage stuff that went on. I said it then. It took them a second incident. We went from Brawl Out to Brawl In, and then finally that was enough. That was the end. The disciplinary committee chimed in, Tony Khan made the final call, and CM Punk had to go. And after the second time, you got no choice. Doesn't matter how big of a draw that person may be. Now, there's just two more quick things on this that I want to chime in on, because Punk talked about at Brawl Out, or I keep calling it Brawl Out, at All Out, before Brawl Out happened later that night, he got injured in his match with Jon Moxley, tore his triceps. He said in the interview, nobody in the company spoke to me for 6 months. I paid for my surgery. I booked my surgery. Thankfully, Doc Samson, who I knew from WWE, helped me with that. I was on my own for all of that stuff. In one place, there's structure and protocols and professional people in charge of things. And I'm not having to research and find a physical therapist. I had no help. Nothing. That's insane to me. Is that how they treat Jaguars players? I don't know, but I don't think anybody should be treated like that, especially when you are a professional athlete. I had no help. Nobody would speak to me. Now, unless they thought he got hurt in the brawl that happened later that night, but it was pretty clear he was hurt during the match, the way he was grabbing at his arm, even during the scrum, I think he said he was hurt. But them not communicating with him at all after that night is insane. And he's not wrong about that. And if he got hurt during the match working in their ring, then they should have taken care of the surgery. Now, maybe there's legal reasons they didn't reach out, but that doesn't make any sense. I mean, he still worked for the company. He is your top star. Your world champion, in fact. How is there no communication there? Again, it all comes back to that word. It all comes down to communication. It's like friends who fight, and then they, you know, give each other the silent treatment because they have too much pride to be the first one to pick up their phone and call or text the other person. Like, what are we doing here? Now, Ariel asked him if there was any chance of him burying the hatchet with he and Colt Cabana, and Punk said probably not. He did admit that Cabana approached him. Now, this would have been sometime before the events of Brawl Out. I don't know how many weeks or months before that, but he said Cabana did approach him one day to talk so that things would not be awkward between them, you know, being on the same roster. And Punk said that he told Colt he will never talk to him without a lawyer present. So he's upset that the Young Bucks didn't want to talk to him, but Cabana tries to bury the hatchet or at least converse so that things aren't weird between them. And he says, I won't talk to you without my lawyer. Amazing. And yet, through everything I've just talked about, Punk did say, he did admit he made a lot of great friends there. He got to work with Sting in Greensboro. He said, I think the positives definitely outweigh the negatives. Maybe for him, personally. But for AEW as a whole, I'm not so sure. As evident by the fact that the biggest match being promoted on their television show this week is CM Punk against Jack Perry. Now let's get away from the Punk stuff here for a second, because there's other AEW news, more stuff for me to rant about here. Back in September, after WWE laid off 100 employees and a bunch of wrestlers following the Endeavor merger, remember that period, I'm sure, Tony Khan took a little shot at them. And he said, there's not a lot of loyalty at times, and there should be, and this is a family business. We're not a public company. Even if I get punched in the face with circumstances, it doesn't mean that I'm going to take it out on the staff by cutting 100 staff or laying off 30 wrestlers. And I really care about the people here. I would do anything I can to protect the jobs and the livelihood of the people that work here, and that's a family business. And that's the difference between a family business and a public company in a lot of ways. And not every family business has those principles, but we do. And that's just how I was raised. This week, Tony Khan got punched in the face with circumstances and he cut 10 people from his family-owned private company. Fightful first reported, and then later PW Insider reported, that Dasha the ring announcer, Stu Grayson, Jose the assistant, Jorah Jole, Gravity, Slim J, Parker Boudreaux, Brandon and Brent Tate, who were Dalton Castle's boys, and Anthony Henry were all released from their contracts. The Dasha cut surprised me the most out of all of them. She's the one who's been the most visible on TV. Most of these other names, I couldn't even tell you the last time I saw them on television. Stu Grayson hasn't wrestled for AEW, I think, since August. Parker Boudreaux hasn't been seen since March of last year. Jose the assistant hasn't been seen since Roosh tore his hamstring in the Continental Classic last year. These are not major names. These are not names that are going to, on their own, affect the company one way or the other. But it is a big change from what Tony Khan used to say when he would talk about honoring people's deals. You know, that being one of the things that differentiated AEW from WWE. He wouldn't release people. Talent relations would just ghost them. Someone's contract would be coming due and they just wouldn't hear from anybody there. And they would just let their deals expire. That's what happened to Joey Janela and a few other people. But he did honor their deals. You heard that quote that I shared. That was only back in September. It's not like that was from 2 years ago. This is why you need to be careful when you take shots at the other guys when they do shitty things, because you yourself one day may have to make those same shitty decisions And people are going to look back at comments like that and call you a hypocrite. But their roster now is just so big. You know, Tony himself said on the Ring of Honor media call the other day that he needs to keep an eye on the budget so that he can keep signing big free agents. He threw a ton of money at Okada and Ospreay and Mercedes, and he has flat out said that he plans to spend more. He ain't done yet. Now, it's not making a dent in their numbers. If he thinks it will, you know, end up making them more money in the long term, having them under contract, then I guess time will tell. I would go after people like Okada and Ospreay too if I knew they were available. But at some point, you've got to push the off button for a little bit and then take a look at the roster that you have right now and make the most of what you've got. If he signs another one or two big free agents like he's talking about doing, that's probably another 10 people out of a job. And these are the types of names that are going to be on the bubble. Now, Tony expanded on things after the Ring of Honor show on Friday night, and he said, I think that this year I have been very active, not only in the free agent market, but in the production budget. There are things tonight, for example, on one song alone, I spent like a year's pay for most pro wrestlers in this business. And the budget not only with free agency, but production is very high. And also, we're going into a contract year. And I plan to continue on being very active, not only in free agency, but in the production of the show and producing great content. Going into this year, I have to look at where we're at. I really spent more than I planned going into this year. Well, you don't say. Now, what he's referring to there on the song, Mark Briscoe at Supercard of Honor on Friday night, he won the Ring of Honor world title 11 years to the day that his brother Jay won the title for the first time. It was a great moment. All the family members flooded the ring, including Jay's kids. It was Eddie Kingston who actually brought that up to Tony Khan leading up to the show. Tony didn't even realize it, that it had been 11 years to the day. Dax Harwood revealed on Twitter that he and Tony worked together on getting the Lynyrd Skynyrd song Gimme Back My Bullets cleared for Mark to come out to. He and his brother used, for years, they used to use that as their entrance music until they just legally couldn't anymore. Dax said, maybe I shouldn't share this, but Tony's exact words to me were, this is the best, and that he put a dollar sign and a blank space. So he didn't share how much money he spent. But basically, this is the best money I've ever spent. That's the kind of boss we work for. Yes, that's the kind of boss you work for. And it's very nice that he is willing to spend big to make that moment even more special for Mark Briscoe and for his family. And for the fan, and to Tony Khan's credit, you know, when people say, oh, he's a nice guy, and you don't always hear about, well, what does that mean? What does he do that makes him a nice guy? I will forever look upon Tony Khan and what he did as far as the way that he treated, you know, the Pugh family in light of Jay's death and, you know, all the stories about how accommodating he's been and even something like this where he thought to even do something like that. That's a very nice gesture on his part that he didn't have to do, but he did. And so I get it, you know, and the nice things that he's done for people. And it was a nice moment there for Mark Briscoe. And he's done that before, too. You know, Bryan Danielson, as far as music goes, right? Shelling out the money for Final Countdown. But when he is asked about 10 people losing their jobs, and part of his answer is, do you realize how costly it was for me to get the rights to this song for this guy to walk out to? It's a year's worth of salary for one wrestler. In the same week that you cut 10 people for what you cite are budget reasons, that is a terrible look. Anthony Henry is one of the names that was just released. That was the biggest low blow of them all because he just got his jaw broken at an independent show last month. He's home recovering. Now he gets fired. And I understand the injury didn't happen on an AEW show, but that doesn't make the timing of it any less terrible. Evidently, Tony Khan feels the same way because he said after having time to reflect and think about it that Anthony Henry will return to the company once he is medically clear. So at least he reconsidered and realized how shitty that was. You know, it sucks to see people lose their jobs, but there was always going to come a day of reckoning where Tony had to start doing this. He's taken on so much talent, and so many of these people were not getting TV time. Tony was also asked about the Tate twins being released and claimed that they no-showed on several occasions and he had to make a tough call. The boys, responded to that on Twitter. Brent said, far from true. And then later on, they released a statement along with several screenshots of text messages and emails to support their claim that in their view, they did not no-show, even though by definition, that's exactly what they did. It reads to me like a lack of communication more than, there's that word again, a lack of communication more than anything. And if they were told one thing about why they were released, and then Tony went and publicly claimed that it was due to a completely different reason, then yeah, that sucks. But in reading through all of these messages that they posted, I'm not really seeing anything overly egregious here from the AEW end. You know, they were trying to save money by booking them to fly to Canada through a different airport that happened to be 3 hours away from where they lived, and they didn't want to do that. They were told AEW would get back to them with some alternate flight options, and then they never did. And that sucks, but they clearly wanted them there at the show, and they did not show up. I would show up as expected and then try to get some FaceTime with somebody there to figure things out going forward to avoid any confusion. They didn't do that. Or at least that's how it reads to me. You can read through them all yourself if you want. I'm not going to read through all these text messages, but they did put out a statement. Their statement reads as follows. We had planned to stay quiet publicly about our release to take nothing away from the biggest show of the year in Supercard of Honor out of respect to the locker room that will be on it. Due to Tony's comments about the numerous fans, media outlets, and friends and co-workers that have reached out to us, that is no longer an option. We want to apologize to Ring of Honor fans and to the AEW fans that were invested in the storyline. We were expecting both of us to be there. With so many fans wanting answers, in addition to the numerous people that have voiced their comments at the thought of us really just no-showing on some of the biggest opportunities of our lives, due to Tony Khan's comments, here it is. My brother and I were told that we would be included in this story through Supercard, and there were plans for us to be with John and Taya leading up to the show. We were asked to pitch several ideas for ourselves, insinuating that we would get the opportunity to show that we can wrestle more in the future. On March 16th, our scheduled date following Dalton losing custody, for the first time in our history of flying in North America, previously with Sinclair's Ring of Honor and now Tony Khan's Ring of Honor, our travel was booked out of Nashville instead of our home airport of Knoxville. On Monday, April 1st, we were contacted by management accompanied by HR on a call to inform us of our release due to budget cuts. At the time, we raised concerns and repeatedly questioned if the release was due to the travel issues. We were repeatedly and adamantly assured this was not the case, and it was based solely on budget cuts. Since Tony's statement, we reached out yesterday providing these specific details, asking for him to clear this up. We have gotten no response. Unfortunately, in the court of public opinion for a lot of people, it is assumed that we are guilty from one man's words until we now have to prove that we are not. We are now forced to release this info along with the screenshot proof to keep people from putting us down on social media. We understand that putting this out is detrimental to our careers, but our back is against the wall on this, and it was either this or let Tony Khan go on saying that we no-showed. Now, when he was asked about this at the Scrum on Friday night, Tony Khan had this to say. I have not seen their exact statement. After the show, I heard a little bit of this as I was coming back. I stand by what I said. And also, I have only owned Ring of Honor for 2 years. There is a long history of ROH. It was my call to bring them back. I liked their presentation with Dalton, and I liked them both personally. I've had a lot of good experiences with them, and I would be open to working with them again in the future. But there have been times when they came and have done great things for us. We did a house rules tour in the South, and I loved having them. And they've been to a lot of the Saturdays, but there have been some times from my era of ROH, and I've been told from the company I inherited other times in the past, and I'm just going off my experiences. As for that, I did talk about that and confirm. I think there's two sides to that story, but I appreciate you asking about it. I know yesterday they said stay tuned, so I stay tuned. I stayed tuned, he said, and then I heard, and I am not moved. So their statement did little to sway Tony Khan, who claims there is a history of this sort of thing with them, and that this was not an isolated incident. And that's it. As far as what we know, that's all we know right now. I can see it from both ends, but it just sounds to me like there's more to this story that has not yet been presented. And we already knew the match was happening, but now it is official that it will be for the title. Jon Moxley will challenge Tetsuya Naito for the IWGP Heavyweight title at New Japan's Windy City Riot in Chicago this Friday, April 12th, airing live on NJPW World. Moxley wrestled on the undercard of Saturday's Sakura Genesis event, teaming with Shota Umino in a winning effort over Jack Perry and Ren Narita. After Naito's successful title defense against Yota Tsuji, Moxley made his way back out to the ring. He confronted Naito, and they agreed to Naito's title being on the line in Chicago. And I said this before, and I'll say it again. I think we're getting a title change. I think Moxley's going to win the title. I think Moxley is going to get a run through Forbidden Door with it. We'll see. We'll see what happens on Friday. That would be one way for New Japan to shake things up a little bit. Also scheduled for that show on Friday, Hiromu Takahashi is wrestling Mustafa Ali. Tomohiro Ishii takes on Nick Nemeth. Jack Perry faces Shota Umino. And the New Japan Television Champion, Matt Riddle, defends against Zack Sabre Jr. And with that, we're going to wind things down here. Again, we're skipping the Dark Side of the Ring review because I have not had a chance to put any notes together. But I did watch the episode. I thought it was good. We'll get back to that next week. And hopefully your mailbag questions as well. Keep emailing me. TheSolemonster@gmail.com. Oh, got to take a breath here. We got a lot of work left to do. As I am sitting here right now, it is 3:20 in the afternoon. The WrestleMania pre-show kicks off in less than 2 hours. I have not eaten anything since 9 o'clock this morning. I got about 4 hours of sleep. I'm very tired, but we're gonna soldier through here. Because we got night two of WrestleMania yet to come, and then I get to come back here and go live on YouTube and talk about it with all of you. I hope you will join me. Again, follow me on Twitter. I'll have updates on there throughout the night, as well as the pay-per-view is ongoing at Solemonster. Subscribe on YouTube. Check out my full night one WrestleMania recap, and not just the Cliff Notes version here on this podcast. And then I'll be back with you next Sunday, as normal, for episode 857 of the Solemonster Sounds Off. I appreciate all of the love and support, especially last night on the stream. You guys killed it. Let's do it again tonight. Be well, stay safe, and I will see you for the Night 2 WrestleMania recap and back here next Sunday. Until then, take care, guys.
The Solemonster Sounds Off.
Kareem points out, we celebrated the fact that we just had our first full week, all bells and be the booker, but we have a pay-per-view. I may have celebrated a little too soon. The Green Pianist says, Kareem is the kid in class that reminds the teacher about homework.
Teacher, you forgot to give us homework. We need homework to have one more be the booker. Don't forget, one more.
I say tomorrow we hang Kareem upside down and shake him so his lunch money falls out of his pocket. And then we'll throw him in his locker and we'll lock him in there. How about that?
Teacher.
The Solemonster Sounds Off. Each week, bursting with content. Podcasts, predictions, reviews, YouTube live streams, and more. Become a channel member for perks and follow The Solemonster on Twitter at Solemonster.
Solemonster.
Solemonster. Solemonster Sounds Off.